I've teamed up with GoCar. Let me tell you why. For those of you who have been following me for a while, you'll know that I don't like car loans, and I've even referred to them as crappy debt. If you own your own car, and you're doing 16,000 kilometres a year, that's a cost of about €10,691 a year. The equivalent of a GoCar is around €3,600. That's a potential saving of €7,000 every year. Not only that, but the hourly rate you pay covers insurance, tax, maintenance and fuel. In Dublin City, it's so convenient. On average, there is a GoCar within a 5-minute walk from wherever you are. Download the GoCar app today for a smarter, more affordable way to move. This is Understanding Money and I am Owen McGee. When I was 2, my dad had a massive heart attack and he had a quadruple bypass. When I was 6, he had another heart attack and he had 3 stents put in. When I was 8, he had another heart attack and he had a quintuple bypass, 5 of them. And at that stage, Dad was only 48 years of age. And he turned to his doctor and he said, "Doctor, 48, the last 6 years, I've had 3 major heart incidents. What am I doing wrong?" The doctor said, "There's 2 things. One, it's hereditary. You can do nothing about that. You just look after yourself, you mind yourself, you keep the weight off, you do all the right things, but you've just got sticky blood, Michael." He says, "The other thing, though, is stress. What's the biggest stress in your life?" And Dad sat back and had a think about it, and he actually said, "You know what? Probably work." The doctor said, "Could you afford to give up work?" Roll on about 2 years later, Dad had done a bit of digging, and soul searching in himself, and said to himself, "Yeah, I would be able to give up work, emotionally, mentally, whatever else. But more importantly, financially, he was able to give up work at 50 years of age. And the reason he was able to give up work at 50 years of age is because somebody, somewhere along the line, had sold him income protection. And that income protection meant that Dad was able to stop working due to ill health. And it meant he was getting paid his, in his case, I think it was 2/3 of his wages until he was ready to go back to work or he retired. He hit normal retirement age, whichever happened first. So Dad was in receipt of that income protection. It meant he was able to look after himself and pull the biggest stress out of his life, That is a big factor in why I do what I do. Some financial advisor gave me an extra 28 years with Dad. 28 years I wouldn't have got if that financial advisor back in the 80s hadn't sat down with Dad and said you should really take out an income protection policy. I think one of the biggest problems we have when it comes to protection is most of us see it as a cost. It's an expense. It's money that we have to fork out every month. But you know what? I see it as 28 years extra with Dad. Today's show is all about protection. Life cover, specified illness cover, income protection. That's what we're going to talk about today. But why not? Let's not talk about the ins and outs of the policies. Let's talk about the people's stories. Let's talk to Jackie. Jackie, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us. And I think you're in the west side of the country somewhere, are you?
I am. I'm just on the outskirts of Galway, so get to deal with all that lovely Galway city traffic when I have to go into town.
Okay, fair enough. Tell me, we're going to talk today just about your own personal journey and what's happened with you and your finances and your health and the kind of crossover between the two of them. So rather than me giving it, why don't you just talk to me yourself? Tell me what you've been through over the last couple of years.
So I was living in the States for a couple of years. I'm very lucky that I have dual citizenship. So I was able to work abroad for a little while. I came home because it was too far away. And when I came home, I very wisely, as soon as I started working back at home, I went and I talked with a financial advisor because I'm single, not married, no kids. So I was like, I need to make sure I'm setting myself up, covering all my bases. I wanted to get a pension ASAP. And I also wanted to check and see what other cover should I have? Should I be looking at life insurance or what are my avenues? So I got my pension set up, good to go with that. And then I asked about the life insurance and he suggested very wisely that I should have some serious illness cover since I don't have any offspring under me and I have no own home or anything like that. So I went and I got my serious illness cover. It was the 10-year term guaranteed kind of payout if something were to unfortunately happen within the time frame. Quiet, pandemic, life, all that fun stuff. And then I had some back issues. I've had them for years, but then I ended up having some surgery on my back. The back surgery, the recovery wasn't going quite as intended. And lo and behold, it turns out I actually have MS.
Wow, okay.
So it was a bit of a shock. It was a bit of a pivot in life. But I was very lucky that I had that serious illness cover and it did provide for me. So I was able to do a couple of things to get me situated.
Okay.
But I'm kind of in the stage now where I've got my pension. I also have an investment portfolio going. I've read both your books, Owen. I've done a lot of my okay. little things because of listening to your stories. I've got a lot of things covered, but because I am on my own and I'm the pure millennial, I'm living with the parents because who can afford a mortgage in Ireland on when you're a single person? So I just need to make sure that I'm covering every basis for God forbid something further comes down the road.
Okay, so tell me about that. You when did you actually get diagnosed with MS? What year was that? 21, 22, was it?
That was 22.
22.
That was okay. September 22. I had surgery in January of 22. Was going through the rehab process and during the summer my physio said, "You got to see your surgeon cuz something's not right." My surgeon took one look at me and he was like, "Oh, this is neurological. I need to get you in for testing." And within the space of 3 days, it was, "Oh yeah, you have MS." It was no questions asked.
Okay. That must have been a really tough thing to get landed with. When you look back on that now, what thoughts come into your head or what feelings come into your head about that time in your life?
It was pure shock initially, but then the more I thought about it and the more I learned and the more I discussed my diagnosis with everyone else in the community, I was like, actually, you know what? This makes a lot of sense. And my neurosurgeon did say, he was like, "I'm pretty sure you've had this over 10 years. It's okay. Just one of those illnesses that is very hard to pinpoint it down specifically unless you go for the multitude of tests. You can have one test and it not really indicate it. You have to have a lot of tests to confirm it." So,
okay. And how, on a day-to-day basis now, is there good days and bad days? Is there good months and bad months? And how does it affect you on a day-to-day basis now?
That is 100% it. Every day is a different day and every day is a learning day. There's something new every single month. It's like, what am I in the hospital for this month? There's something new every single month. And it's about adapting and learning your new norm,
yeah.
But not letting it get to you too bad. If like I was very, very lucky with my job. They have very good mental health cover for us.
Okay.
So one of the benefits of my job is that they offer you actual counseling sessions.
Okay.
You get 8 sessions a year. I utilized that last year after my diagnosis and I was very glad to have it. Once I kind of settled down and I've accepted the fact, I was like talking it through with someone, which really, really helps. And
yeah.
There's not enough talk about mental health in this country. It really does stand to you to talk to someone professionally.
100%. And your employer is supportive on that front. Are they supportive with your day-to-day working environment and your arrangements and everything else as well?
Yeah. I'm very, very lucky because while we were in lockdown, we all went virtual.
Right.
It was great. We were working from home because I had that behind me. As soon as I got my diagnosis, they were like, "You've got a medical exception. You can stay working from home. We're not going to bring you back into the office. We're not going to have you deal with that kind of drama unnecessarily when you're able to do what you're doing from home consistently for the last 3 years." So
that must have been huge for you.
Oh, it was such a weight off because, I mean, everyone was stressing about getting back into the office and getting that routine back going. And I was like, "I can't even drive into Galway City, lads." It literally takes so much out of me. I have to have a recovery day after driving in the city. It's that stressful. So
okay.
I'm very lucky in that regard.
Jackie, tell me about the claims process itself. So you got diagnosed. Did you go back to your financial advisor, financial planner at the time and say, "Look, I've got this diagnosis. What do we do?" Or how did it go about? What happened?
I did reach out to them initially, but unfortunately, I don't know whether it was lockdown or what was going on. They weren't very responsive. I tried calling them. I got no responses. And so I went about it myself. It was through Zurich. So I went and I reached out to them. I was like, look, I have this diagnosis. I have all this paperwork. I need to proceed with my claim. They weren't as, what's the best way of putting it? As streamlined as I'd say they would have been if it had been the financial advisor who'd set me up on the policy. They dragged their heels a little bit in paying out, like insurance companies do. But I got the payout in the end, thankfully. It just took maybe 6 months versus maybe, you know, 6 weeks with the person who set it up kind of thing.
And when in terms of what type of stuff did they ask you to do? They asked you for medical? Did they just write to your GP? What did they do?
Everything. They kept asking for more reports and more reports and more reports. And I'm like, I have all of these. That's not a problem. I got a letter from my consultants. I got a letter from my GP. I had everything. They couldn't not give it to me. So we got there in the end.
Okay. So you got the payout and it goes into your bank account. It was one off lump sum. That's it. The diagnosis is made. The payment is made out. You were in the lucky position back in 2018 when you moved back here that you were financially, you were looking forward. So you made these decisions, you engaged with the right people who put the cover in place and you were very lucky to get it out. And you did come back with the intention or went into that financial planner with the intention of taking out a pension. And I assume you're still paying into that pension today and that's still ongoing. But when something like this happens, Jackie, like that was all about money and your future and your financial future. When something like this happens, how does it change your opinion about money?
It changes it entirely because I was future planning for all my fun stuff I was going to do when I retire and all having, you know, the fun times for retirement. Whereas now it's more, okay, I need to get myself set up that I'm going to be cared for. I'm going to have what I need because, as I said, I'm single right now. I'm living with my parents. They're not going to be here when I retire. So who's going to look after me or how am I going to be situated? What's my plan? So it's scary that that's where I have to think, but I've always been a planner. Yeah. I don't like the unknown. So this diagnosis is not great for me personally, but as long as I can kind of have some kind of backing behind me, I'll feel a lot better.
Okay. And can I ask some of the harder questions in terms of how this disease will progress or how this condition will progress? What does it mean for you in the future?
So unfortunately, I was diagnosed with primary progressive MS. So there's three types. There's relapsing remitting, there's secondary progressive, and then there's primary. So unfortunately, I went straight in at the top tier of things. So I'm not going to... I'm at the stage where I'm just trying to prevent me getting worse.
Okay.
I can't repair the damage that's been done. So I'm trying to slow down the need. Like right now, I use a rollator when I'm in the shopping center or going through airports or things like that. Eventually, it will go to a wheelchair.
Okay.
Right now, I have an automatic car. Eventually it'll go to pedals on the car. I won't have foot pedals. So like there will be steps in the progression. Right now I'm stable. That's the best way of putting it. It's just a matter of doing what I can to get myself in a good situation. Like I do physio. I'm very lucky. MS Ireland are a fantastic charity and they have great services for anyone with MS. And they have loads of online physio classes and they gear them towards the different symptoms that you might have, whether it be fatigue, whether it be vision issues, whether it's mobility issues, incontinence issues. They have so many different programs online to help you try and combat your symptoms as much as possible.
When you think about your future, and I'm looking for a really broad view starting point here. I want you to just kind of take a step back and from our discussion so far and think about your future. What's the scariest bit of it for you?
The scariest part of it is that I'll end up in a nursing home that's just for the likes of senior citizens and I'm not quite there.
Right.
So I'll be 60, but I'm in a nursing home for the ones who are 80 and 90. Mm. And I'm not quite at that mental stage, but physically I'm very limited.
Okay.
That would be very frustrating.
I never have, and maybe it's not the right suggestion, but have you ever walked into a nursing home and seen what they're like?
I have. I've had, there's longevity in my family.
Right.
All my family tend to live to their 90s.
Yeah.
95s are the average. So I've been in a number of different nursing homes, but my family have all had, like, I'm the only spinster in the family.
Okay.
So everyone has had their own kids and they've had their own relatives around them. So they've been able to stay in their home for a very, very long time and not had to have gone into a home until the very end kind of thing. Whereas I'm like, I don't want to be that burden on my nieces and nephews. And that wouldn't be fair on them, I don't think.
But what I find interesting about your fear, you've all of this stuff going on, and but your fear is around what the nursing home environment, if you end up in one, what the nursing home environment is going to be like, and will you feel out of place in it, right? And that's why I'm asking, have you ever walked into one and seen what it's like, and is there different types of one? Because I think, I thought you were going to give me some other fear, and I don't mean to diminish it, it's your fear, and it's the biggest, like when I asked you what's your biggest fear, that's what it was. But I just wonder, is there a way of trying to allay that fear? Is it about going and seeing them or staying away from them completely? I don't know. And that's not my place to say. But I just wonder, is there different levels? And I would imagine MS Ireland would be great for something like that, is to be able to talk you through what it's going to be like. And like, this is a podcast about money, but it's also a podcast about life. And that's your fear. And I just wonder, is there anything you can do? And I don't know the solution, but I wonder, is there anything you can do to try and alleviate that fear? To try and maybe get more information about it, find out what it looks like. What does independent living, is there steps into it? What does it look like in terms of how it might look in the future? And also, how is it going to look in the future? How different will it be then? And what different supports will we have?
That's it. I'm getting way ahead of myself when you consider that I've still got over 20 years of working, hopefully.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. I've at least 20 years of working still ahead of me.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, as I said, I like to be prepared and ready. And especially if I'm going to need the likes of a nursing facility, having my money situation to hand, because, I mean, we all know that the Irish state pension is not going to be as fruitful as we would like come 20 years time, if it's even there.
What about your financial planner now? I know there was a bit of a lack of engagement there when you were trying to put the application form, but are you back in touch with them now? Have they looked down and looked at your financial future and what it might look like?
I haven't been back with them since now. They eventually came back to me nearly after the fact when I got the payout, and they apologized that it took so long to get back to me. They didn't understand how they missed me. And I'm like, okay, well,
okay.
Is there anything that you can tell me? Is there anything you can advise me of? But they really couldn't.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I think in terms of the fears and the alleviations that I can possibly help with. One of them would be, I think, a really clear long-term financial plan. And you build that out and you say, okay, if I'm going to be actively working for the next 20 years on a full pay, this is what my long-term financial future looks like. If I'm going to be doing it for 10, if I'm going to be doing it for 30, whatever it is, right? You work out, okay, if best case scenario, this is what it looks like. But if things are different than best case, what does it look like? And this happens whether you are somebody who has been given a diagnosis like yourself, but it also happens to all of us. Like, the perfect example or illustration of that is if I have a couple who walks through the door, one of them might be of the opinion, I'm terrified to spend money today because I want to make sure I have enough money when I'm 75. And the other person in the same couple might be, ah, sure, look, we just spend it today, let tomorrow worry about itself, right? And a good financial plan sorts out both. And I think a good financial plan for you that really looks at the long-term financial future and shows you where your money is going to come from is your first step to do it. I would never say never, but it'd be quite difficult for you to get, like, income protection could be a perfect thing for you, right? It would be quite difficult for you to get income protection because, unfortunately, the probability of you needing it is higher and therefore they're less likely to give it to you, okay? But that doesn't mean that, like, sometimes, interestingly enough, and the companies mightn't want me saying this out loud, but if you were part of a big group income protection policy, right? And this is where there's two, I don't know how many people, and we don't want to talk about who your specific job is, right? Or who you work for. And they've been, even though they've been, it's all been positive about them, let's just not go there, right? Because even that they don't get marked for this, right? That we go looking for it. But if you have 2,000 people working for a company and they decide to introduce income protection, a group scheme for all the 2,000 employees. The insurance company doesn't look at that and say, okay, let's look at all the individuals. They look at the group as a whole and say, statistically, what's the chances of us having to pay out here? So it's now group underwriting as opposed to an individual underwriting. There are some exceptions to that, but that's typically the way it works. And the only requirement is that, is this person who you're putting on this application form, are all of these 2,000 people, are they working today? And there's a specific, like, the day of the application form, are they actually working today? So there are times where you might be able to access income protection as part of a bigger group scheme because the underwriting process is different, okay? But I think your first key thing would be to get a good, solid financial plan that helps you understand what does your financial future look like. But also, and again, I'd be back in MS Ireland, back to MS Ireland here, what are the financial supports available from the state in the future? What are available to you now? I'm sure they're very good at informing you about that. But in the future, if things change, and for me, and Jackie, this has to be up to you what way it works. For me, what I like to do is like what I said, walk into the nursing home, expose myself. If that was a fear of mine, I would go in and expose myself to that just to see what it's like and to see, are my fears actually created in my head or are they real and what can I do about it? I'm not saying that's going to work for you. I'm saying that's what would work for me, okay? But also when it comes to my financial future, what's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? Let's do all the maths here together. Let's work it through and decide, okay, how do we look here? And actually, you know what? Really bad isn't actually all that bad. And I think we can survive, and particularly if we know what we're going to get from the state and what supports we're going to get there too. And I would suggest, based on what you've said, you have a good financial foundation already. And therefore, it's just about trying to build on that into the future. You've also got a very supportive employer, which will help you build on it from the future. But I think, Jackie, I think your story is incredible in terms of you started your financial journey in 2018 before all of this. It did mean you get a specified illness payout, but also your financial future now, it sounds to me like you've got a bit of a foundation there too. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I do. I feel like I've got good basis behind me, but I just want to make sure that I'm absolutely giving myself as much of an opportunity going forward as well.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, as you always say, we need to enjoy ourselves as well. I'd like to be able to do those things. Like part of my payout, you'll be happy to know I did utilize part of the payout. I'm going on my first ever cruise this year.
Brilliant. And that's exactly what you should be trying to do, is stuff like that and doing things and experiences and enjoying life as best you can. You enjoy the life that's sitting in front of you today. And I know it absolutely takes a lot out of you to go into Galway and out, and taking that into account and trading it off and saying, no, this is worth the effort and the additional effort that you're going to have to put into it physically to do these things. I do hope there was nothing in there that I upset or insult you or anything, and that I was sensitive throughout the conversation. But I also hope that you can see maybe a route of where I think you should go next. I think a real solid financial plan is your first step for everything here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Definitely. I think I have a lot of little puzzle pieces, but I don't know if they're all connected. So that's maybe where I need to look at next.
Yeah. And I think a good financial planner is the route to do that. And if your existing planners aren't fulfilling that, you need to get another one. Okay. Because this is the natural step that you should be taking after any life event change, whether it's a life event like yours or some other life event that happens to somebody. You should be reviewing your financial future when these things happen.
Yeah. And as I said, you don't know what's coming behind you. So you always want to make sure you're covering all bases. I keep trying to tell my friends, I'm like, guys, just get serious illness cover. I mean, for the sake of freaking 2 pints a month, you can cover yourself because you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. You know who you're talking to. I'm a big believer in both specified illness cover and income protection. And you were lucky that you had it in place. When you put it in place, you were lucky that you did it then. Because sometimes people come looking for it after a diagnosis of some description and they wish they had have done it sooner. So Jackie, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. I know people are going to get a lot for it. And please do keep in touch with us, because I know I'll certainly be interested to see how things go on. And I'd love to see you getting a solid financial plan that you feel gives you kind of financial security about your own future. And maybe some of the other stuff we talked about doing to alleviate some of the other scary things that are in your head might work for you too. Thank you very much.
Definitely. Thanks very much, Owen.
I'm joined by Sarah, our marketing executive from Prosperous, with today's or this week's Q&A. Hello. How many do we have this week, Sarah?
We have two questions today.
Great. Okay, we just jump in?
Yeah, let's go first.
Let's go.
Good morning. My question to you is, since we took out our mortgage a few months ago, we got the mortgage protection from a financial planner, and they advised us then to get a serious illness cover plus life cover, and also income protection. And I think we got probably the Rolls Royce of all of these covers, you know, just in case we got seriously ill and all the rest. And we suggest we'll get everything. But now on reflection, I'm paying $300 a month, and we also have health cover, full health cover. I'm just worried, am I getting too many products for, you know, no reason? I can't afford $300 a month, and I'm just wondering, is there an alternative? Thanks a million. This is Anne-Marie.
So what's the crux of Anne-Marie's question?
Is it overkill? Is she overinsured?
Okay. The interesting thing here is one of the things that I zoned in on there was, I can't afford €300 a month.
Yeah,
and that's
a lot.
Her word, right?
Yeah.
Her words were, I can't afford €300 a month. The reality is, it doesn't matter what type of insurance it is.
Yeah.
Insurance is incredibly expensive if you never use it.
Mm.
And it's absolutely invaluable if you need
when
it.
When you need it,
okay?
Yeah.
And it'll always feel like an expense until the day you need it. The thing, you can't actually answer that question for any individual without pulling their finances apart and putting them back together. But let's just remind ourselves of the different things that are going on here. Like, the life cover is the life cover. If either of them die, the mortgage is going to be paid off, for the sounds of it, right? She called it serious illness cover. We call it specified illness cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a difference. The reason is because there was a court case at one stage where somebody said, I want to pay out. And the company said, no, we're not paying out. And they said, why not? And they said, because it's not on our list of specified illnesses. And they said, but I have serious illness cover. This is serious. Okay.
Yeah.
And so now it's always called specified illness cover. There's a list of illnesses, there's often 50 of them. The typical ones that are paid out on are heart attack, cancer, heart attack and stroke are the three main ones that are paid out on. And actually, for males, it's about 2/3 of male claims are for heart attack. And it's a little bit more than that for females. It's for cancer. Cancer would be the big one for females is the cancer payouts. What happens with specified illness cover is it's a lump sum that's paid out once you're diagnosed with one of these illnesses.
Okay.
You get diagnosed with it, they pay out a lump sum. So in that case, the mortgage will be cleared off in full.
Okay.
And then you've got income protection. Right, so we've looked at life cover, pays out if you die, specified illness cover, pays out if you get diagnosed with a specified illness. And then the other one is income protection. Income protection is slightly different in that it pays out when you're out of work long term.
Okay.
So if you're out of work long term due to an illness, and typically it would be after 13 weeks or 26 weeks, so 26 weeks is 6 months, you're out of work 6 months, this kicks in and it pays you up to 75% of your wages, including the social welfare. And it pays you that until you're ready to go back to work, you're medically able to go back to work, or you hit retirement, whichever happens first.
Okay.
Okay. So potentially you could take this out at 25 years of age, go off long-term sick at 26 years of age, and it would pay you all the way up to 65 or whatever age you had chosen on the form as your normal retirement age.
Yeah.
The problem with it is that, for example, that pays you your wages. Specified illness pays a lump sum.
Yeah.
There are things that specified illness covers that income protection doesn't, and vice versa.
Yeah, I was going to say, would there ever be a case that you'd need both? Because they
can pay out on both. So say, for example, you get diagnosed with cancer, the specified illness cover pays out, you're going through treatment and you're out of work for more than 13 or 26 weeks and you're still out of work. It'll keep paying you because you're medically unfit to work.
Yeah.
The opposite side, though, is you could have, like we have had situations in the office where we had someone who got a lump sum payout from their specified illness cover for a heart issue, but they were back in work within the 13 weeks and the income protection never kicked in.
Yeah.
Okay. And then vice versa, you could, about 25% of all the claims on income protection are for mental health issues.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that's not a specified illness claim.
So you wouldn't get a lump sum,
but you would get your income.
Okay.
So the problem with it is trying to fit and match what the needs are of the people.
And they could be connected. Like you could, like mental health, that we've spoken about it before, like would, like it could come from an illness that you had where you got your specified income payout and then you're back to work and then you need to take some time off again.
Exactly. And that's the point is, If someone can sit in front of me and tell me exactly what medical conditions and issues they're going to have and how long they're going to be able to work, I can tell them exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And this is what insurance does.
Yeah.
Insurance is trying to cover all the bases.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that the only way that person is going to find out whether or not they're overinsured or not. It's not a blanket, yes, you're definitely overinsured. And you can't even say it's 300 euros a month, so you must be overinsured. And that's where people get caught up big time. Like that person chats to their mate, 300 quid a month, sure, I'm only paying 30 and I have everything covered. He tells me I'm grand. Everyone's circumstances are different. And it's how long is a piece of string kind of an answer.
Yeah.
You do need to look at it specifically for you and see how it works out.
Yeah.
Was that only the first question?
Yeah.
It was a long answer, right? So let's try and go for another one.
Hi, I have a question in relation to income protection. I work for the HSE and I decided to take out income protection through Core Market, who have a deal with public sector workers. The process was kind of difficult. I found the insurance company involved wouldn't talk to me directly, but wouldn't complete my claim. They would only talk to my GP, who didn't really want to talk to me because he's a GP and he's too busy for that. So I eventually found out that the issue was because I have a medical condition that has been treated, but I'm still under a sort of annual review and stuff with the consultant because of it. But it is treated and is under control, and I'm never going to have another issue with it. But the insurance company won't give me cover until I'm discharged from this consultant. So now I'm finding that with my next appointment with the consultant, I'm going to actually ask him to discharge me so that I can get cover. And I probably wouldn't do that if I wasn't looking for the income protection. So this just doesn't feel right. And I think maybe I should take a different approach to it, but I'm not really sure what to do. It just doesn't feel right. So I'm just looking for some better options, or maybe I just need a different insurance company. I'm not sure. I'd be grateful if you could give me some pointers on that. Thank you.
Okay. So give me your synopsis of that.
Well, I think like you're always told by everyone, your health comes first, and listening, like I would always take my doctor's word as gospel and I would feel uncomfortable the same way she was saying, asking to be discharged if it's not necessarily what would have come next naturally. So that is quite stressful. But then also, you know, income protection is a really, really important thing to have. And I think like which comes first kind of like, which is more important.
And it's interesting because you are right. Your health comes first, right? Yeah. That's the most important thing. The thing about it is you have to think about it from the insurance company's perspective.
Yeah.
If we can go there for a minute, right? Who's going to have sympathy for them, right? But let's just try and take it from their head. How are they viewing the situation? On one hand, she has told us that she's never going to have an issue with this again.
Yeah.
Right. But on the other hand, her doctor hasn't discharged her. Right. Yeah. So the insurance company's going, if you're never going to have an issue with this again, your doctor believes that. Why do they keep asking you to come back and check in on you if this is if it's completely solved? And I don't want to put fears in this person's head, right? But they're contradictory things with the narrative. And as an insurance company, they're just going to look at that and say, there's a bit of confusion there. We're not sure. We're not doing anything about it, right? Yeah. What I would find, whether it's this condition or any condition, right? The GP, she's right. Oftentimes the GPs just aren't in the position to be able to argue the case. Some GPs will. What I have found very regularly is when you go in and talk to the consultant about it, the consultants love a good argument with the insurance companies, right? And if they can give you a letter that outlines this is why they don't believe an insurance company is being fair by the decision that they're making or the position that they're taking in relation to this person's specific illness, that can go a long way towards trying to convince the insurance company that this is, so that you're a safe bet to insure. Yeah. Okay. I would be really slow. And in fact, absolute, do not get yourself discharged to try and get insurance.
Yeah.
Okay, full stop. That's and the doctor won't allow you to discharge yourself. Yeah. And you need the doctor to discharge you. You can't just discharge yourself because you won't satisfy. If you discharge yourself in this case, that you're not going to satisfy the insurance company. But I would be talking to the consultant the next day and say, look, this situation I'm in, would you be able to put something in writing for me?
Yeah, that and says, if she has been told that she's never going to have an issue with this illness in the future, the consultant can vouch for that.
Yeah, put it on paper and give them the kind of security that they're looking for in it. But then the other thing you need to do is get yourself a decent broker, because one company's opinion will be very different from another company's opinion. And therefore, when you have that, with that information in your hand, go and do a bit of shopping around to get the broker to do it for you. So it's the same for everyone out there. If you're finding it difficult to get cover, trying for different insurers will help, but also loading yourself up with as much information and backup from the professionals that you can possibly get your hands on will really, really improve your case.
Yeah.
So that's this week's questions. Thanks very much for coming in, Sarah.
Thank Thank you.
What do you want from listeners?
So from listeners, we are just looking for questions that you have, advice that you're looking for. If you could get them in by voice note, that's great. Also, if you have any suggestions of topics you'd like to hear, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself on the podcast, please get in touch on 087 291 0507.
That's great. Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I think if nothing else, if you get nothing else from this show today, I just hope that what you're taking away from it is, I need to just check this out and see if I should have it. As a financial planner, it's one of the things that I lose more sleep about with my clients than anything else. I don't want to engage with a client, tell them what they need, and then walk away in terms of income protection and specified notice cover. As a financial planner, I'm building a financial plan for a client that looks at what happens if everything goes right. Are you going to have enough money? Protection closes the back door for me on a financial plan. It means that we're making sure, yeah, the plan is built around everything going right, but if anything goes wrong, we've got your back as well. And what I would say is I would hope that if you're not getting advice right now about your protection needs, that you go out there after this, listen to this, and you get the advice you need. It's very specific. Your recommendation is very unique to you. And just go and get that advice from a professional. Don't leave it too late. Don't leave yourself in a circumstance where you wish you had of. Putting a few quid towards it on a month-to-month basis will make a massive difference if you need it. And it won't make that dramatic of a difference if you don't. Thanks for listening. Please do get in touch with your questions and suggestions. This has been Understanding Money.